This is the Let's Get Real Estate Show with your host, Danielle Chason.
Full-time investor, strategic consultant, motivational coach, sought-after speaker,
and host of your number one real estate investing show, Let's Get Real Estate,
where real people are doing real estate.
Hey, this is Darius. I'm on the Let's Get Real Estate podcast with Danielle Chason. Today we talked about property management, how I got to 10 properties, and some home buying tips. Please enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody, it's Danielle Chason here, and welcome back to the Let's Get Real Estate podcast. This is where I bring to you real people doing real estate. And today we have on the show Darius Keller. Woo, woo. Hey, Darius, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me, Danielle.
Yeah, thanks for taking your time and coming on the show and joining us. I wanted to share with the audience, because this is the Let's Get Real Estate podcast, where we keep it real and we showcase real people getting into real estate. There's a lot of people out there that says, hey, I can't do this. It's too big for me. Real estate is only for the rich people. And I love your story. So can you share with the audience a little bit about Darius Keller and how you got into real estate? Because I just think it's a brilliant story.
Yeah. So I started back in 2014, in the middle of the year. And I was still a janitor at the time, going to school, trying to finish up my master's degree, baby on the way. A lot of the same issues that many of you guys have today, and living with other people. So I dealt with a lot of the same struggles. And I did save $10,000, and I went out and tried to purchase what I did. I purchased my first home back in 2014. It was a two-story colonial for $9,100, 35 minutes outside of Detroit in a small city called Pontiac in Michigan. So fast forward today, I've built a seven-figure portfolio. I've owned a total of 10 properties. I've only sold one, which is a condo, and I kept all the single family homes because single family homes they perform extremely well, especially in a short period of time. And now I'm essentially sharing my story and helping others through my website at rewithd.com, where I take your struggles, I take, you know, very tough situations, and I simplify it and make it comprehensible for the next investor or next home buyer.
Yeah. And everybody needs a little bit of guidance, essentially. And learning from somebody who's been there is always great, because you pass on that experience. But it wasn't easy. I mean, when you first started and you were going to school, you were working full time, you had a wife and a baby on the way, like, it's just a lot of pressure. And that's just life. But ultimately, you didn't let that slow you down, right? So you bought your first property, and then you realized, heck, you know, there's something I can do here, right? So tell me how that kind of was an aha moment and you ended up shifting into multiplying that one property into more.
Yeah. So, you know, when during that time I was purchasing my first property, you know, I only had 10 grand. So I'm like, I'm noticing, you know, the market was in the recovery phase. So that just trying to give you an idea what the market looked like. And I went from every house I was looking at was around $10,000. Some properties were like 30 grand because I was looking for a land contract as well, just trying to get into any home that I could. And I stopped in. Give me a better example. So I was not looking to invest when I started. I was just looking to, like, you know, buy my first home. And I ran into another situation where I had an opportunity to buy a second property. So I ended up purchasing my second property with cash. It was $2,500. And the reason why I purchased that property so quickly, because all the other properties that I was looking at were purchased so fast. I already knew the market was going to start to pick up. This may be my only chance to buy cheap properties in this area. So I took advantage of the recession. Fast forward today, So after I purchased my second property, which is the $2,500 house, I slowly fixed both of those two properties up. And then I took a HELOC out of my primary residence. The HELOC was a regular equity loan. And I used that to purchase my third property from auction.com. Auction.com is a very, well, during that time, it was very tough to bid properties on that site because you could not go inside and see the properties. You actually had to, you know, you could only see a few of the photos of the properties from that website. So the my home appraised around 42 grand. I took around 80% out because it was my primary residence, and I paid about 35 grand for the property on auction.com, which was like a ranch, three beds, two bathrooms, two car garage. So I was still kind of taking advantage of the market. But even after my third property, purchasing it, I still didn't really know what I was doing. I was just kind of like, okay, maybe, you know, I'm getting somewhere with this. But my third property is when I stopped having, I had my first non-family member tenant. So I started to deal with a lot of the same issues that many investors contact me about today. So I dealt with my first eviction on my third property, first sewer issue. So I had an issue with this. I had two issues with the sewer line. One issue was at that house, and one was at my house within the same year. Sewer lines are extremely expensive. I think one of the repairs was like $5,200. Now, on my third property, that's when I finally started to understand what I was doing, understanding the financing. And I just want to make this comment too, that in today's market, you have a lot of newer investors who think that it's easier to invest back when the prices were cheaper. That's just not the case. Back in 2014 and even early, you know, even a little earlier when we were in prime recession period, it was a lot harder to get the financing. Banks contracted. They were still skeptical about loaning out money, even in the recovery phase. Today, I would say it's a lot easier because banks are more lenient. Yes, the prices are a lot higher. Yeah, interest rates are starting to climb back up, but banks are willing to work with you. And there's all kinds of programs out there, whether to save your property that you're struggling to make payments on, or to buy a new property.
Yeah, I think the financing is very dependent on the market too, right? Some markets are easier to get financing than others. And of course, what the economy is doing too will always have an impact on that. And right now, the economy is contracting a little bit and they're being a little bit conservative. But to your point, they're still lending, but maybe they're just lending at a more conservative valuation of the property and at a lower loan to value. But at least we can still tap into some capital. I am curious. I want to circle back to when you bought your third property. I mean, you bought it, you did a refi on your primary residence and extracted the equity out of your primary residence. Now, just so the audience is clear, your primary residence, you bought it for $9,100, but you did a lot of work into that property and raised the valuation up to over $40,000, right? So you were able to take out that $35,000 to essentially buy a third property. But if you bought that for $35,000 and then it needed some work, where did the money for the renovations come from? Because if I'm a new investor and I'm going to say, okay, great, well, I have $35,000 to buy a property, I just don't have the money to renovate. So how did you structure that?
Yeah, so my first property, it probably took me about a year and a half to fix up from the day I bought it. My second property took me about 2 years. And I was still living with family members. There were six of us. So, you know, we were still sharing the utilities. I had a paid off property, but I was, like I said, because we were sharing the bills, I was able to, you know, little by little put into repairs. Plus I put a lot of sweat equity in myself. That's why I know as much as I know today is because I pulled the permits myself. I actually, if in Michigan, at least in Pontiac, if the property's in your primary residence, they allow you to pull the permits yourself if you're living in it. So that's where I was getting a lot of the experience. You know, my first and second home, I got a lot of the experience from. And then also too, Home Depot still does this today. So 24 months, no interest for $2,000 or better, you spend at Home Depot. So what I did is I used my Home Depot credit card and I bought all my materials that I needed for the property, or at least this expensive stuff. And that actually gave me an additional cash to repair the property with. So after I got done with my first property, I fixed up my second property, that $2,500 house. And I kind of did that. That one actually was a lot tougher than my first, because it was in way worse condition. When I walked inside the door, it was raining inside, you know? So when I bought the $2,500 house, I still didn't really know how to do a bunch of stuff. I just jumped into the game. And I used the home, you know, I paid down the Home Depot credit card on my first property. And I did the same thing on my second property, just, you know, saving little by little. But like I said, it took me 2 years. Now, when I got to my third property, things started to get more interesting, because now I got like a corporate job at that time. I got a better corporate job. I was doing a little bit better financially. Not too great. I would still say I was making below 40 grand a year. So, but I was starting to use the rent from the second property to also help me, make small repairs to the third property. And the condition of that third property was in, it was not in the condition of the first and second homes. It was in a lot better condition, fully finished basement. The only thing I did was flooring, bathroom, and a little bit on the kitchen. So there's not much. So basically, just put some lipstick on a pig and rent it out.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, it's always a sweet spot trying to figure out, you know, how much rentals do you do in a rental, because you don't want to over-renovate, because a lot of tenants, depending on the area too, where the property is, areas might have a higher profile tenant where you can charge a little bit more and maybe they take care, you hope that they take better care of your unit. But depending where it's at, you just want to make sure you don't over-renovate your house, because you could be essentially be throwing money out the window, right? So, yeah, go ahead.
So that's a very good point. See, when I bought my primary residence, I didn't have the money to put granite countertops and stuff. So it was a clean and functional home, and that's what also kept me in the range where I can still today turn it into an investment, a rental property. Just like my $2,500 house, I made sure it was a clean and functional. Now, I do want to just talk about a little bit more about the primary residence, because initially I took out a 40 grand loan on that property recently. And back in, I think it was 2020, I did another loan on the property, and the property appraised at 112. So you can see how the market does fluctuate in very short periods of time with real estate. So I went from, getting a it was a drive-by appraisal is what I did on my primary residence, to getting an appraisal at $112,000 later on, which I did utilize that money again later on.
Yeah. And all of that in less than 10 years, which is amazing. And so I just wanted to highlight to the audience, look, you don't need to be fully educated and versed in real estate to be able to go out and educate or to go out and invest in real estate. Now, do you want to know some stuff? I don't think it's a good idea to go in with your eyes blind, which is why there's a lot of people out there that'll help you, coach you, aid you along the way and mentor you, because you don't want to make a mistake. It could be a very costly mistake in real estate, but essentially it's a great avenue that anybody can really invest in if you want to do a little bit of the work. And there is work involved. I think a lot of people think that investing in real estate is passive. It's easy. And you buy a house, you rent it out, and that's it. You close your eyes and go to bed. And it doesn't work out that way. As you're telling me here, Darius, your experiences with the tenants and your first eviction, and then having to deal with sewer systems. And that's a $5,200 expense that you weren't expecting. So it's not passive when you have rental properties, but it definitely has a great return. I do want to highlight something that you mentioned, Darius, about how it took you a year and a half to do your first reno, where you put sweat equity into it. And sweat equity meaning you do some of the work yourself instead of hiring it out, where you're sweating doing the work. And it took you 2 years for the second one. But I think a lot of people think that you got to buy a house and buy like five in 1 year. It doesn't have to be that way. It's a long-term game, right? And so, yeah, go ahead.
No. It's definitely a long-term game. And, you know, you do have the option of using your first home as sort of an investment or a way to get you into investing. I tell people all the time, there's a method, there's a trade up method. You know, you can, you know, start off with a starter home and then live there, save up, get your foundation underneath you, and then use that as a down payment for your bigger home. So again, even if we have the FHA, the 3.5%. I mean, there's so many programs out there to help to get you in those dream homes. So.
Yeah. And I think it's just a matter of getting out there, getting educated, knowing what the rules are. I think buying your first house is the hardest part. I mean, that's the hardest part of getting into real estate is buying your first house, right?
Yeah. Eventually they start to pay for themselves, but the first one is, man, that thing is, it's tough.
Yeah. Switching from renting into home ownership is definitely hard for people, but it's doable. And that's why I want to showcase your story here. So tell me some of the lessons you learned, because you said like with property management, there's a lot of lessons that you learned along the way. So what can you share with our audience as far as tips that you've learned with property management that you'd like to pass on to others?
Yeah. So I manage all the properties myself. I've never had a property manager. And so two things. Number one, sourcing. When you're sourcing the property, do an open house. Even if you want to charge a $50 or $40, you know, a little application fee, just so you can get something for your time. I think that's a big benefit. But when I'm able to do an open house, I'm able to see the person who the prospect tenant. I'm able to shake their hand, you know, speak to them. You know, I'm not at the open house. I have an administrator who sits there and conducts the open house. I'm never there, but the open house is extremely powerful. And then I have a two-step application process. So the first, because I've had like 75 applications come in at one time. I had to find a faster way to source tenants. So that's why we have a two-step application process. But the first application, the first step, it allows me to filter through quickly. And they're basically just, 15 questions straight to the point. And then if you're chosen to go to step two, then it's more thorough. You know, we do like the background checks and that thing. But we also utilize the Zillow property manager as well for applications. And Zillow's a great way because we already have all your information if you have a profile in there. So we, you know, if you upload your pay stubs, if you upload your credit history, background checks, we can get that right out of Zillow. So I use those two things during the time that I'm sourcing, you know, looking for a new tenant. And that way I have the open house, plus I have Zillow to kind of find a great applicant.
Yeah. And I think that's really important. I think when you're vetting for tenants, I think that is the first line of defense for landlords of protecting their property. And I find there's too many landlords who just don't want to put in the time in order to properly vet their tenants. And that's where you end up with a problem tenant. And so you mentioned Zillow. Zillow, I don't believe we actually can access Zillow here in Canada. So for anyone listening that's in Canada, we have tenant verification services and rent check, I think it's called. There's quite a few different background checks that we can use as well. Zillow is one of them in the States. Yeah. So I love that. Pointing out that, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So once I find a tenant and I execute I pick a day where we can sit down and execute the contract and go over the contract. And at that point, that's when I do come in. So me and my administrator, we choose, you know, we agree on a prospect tenant, and then I'm able to then meet the tenant, the prospect tenant, and then go through all the line items on the contract in person. I've had an issue where I submit a contract and the person just signs off and doesn't read or review everything. And that's when there's a lot of confusion. But ever since I've been doing that contract in person and taking that 5 minutes, I haven't had as much trouble So that, which that saves me a lot of money, because one of my evictions cost me north of $7,000 before in just a, you know, a little single family house. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you want to level that up for those people that are listening, if you want to walk them through any clause that is very important, or maybe that something that's not standard, when you cover that in the contract, have them initial beside that clause. So for example, you know, no growing of marijuana weeds or marijuana plants, right? And then just initial that, or no waterbeds, have them initial that clause. So any clause that you see being being a sticking point, you can also just have them initial right next to it, right? That they can't add in an air conditioner, a window air conditioner unit without consent first, written consent from you. Have them initial that, so that, because I mean, if you're paying the utilities, that's going to increase your expenses, right? So you want to make sure that not only do you walk them through it, but you can have them initial. And I also record those interactions.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they can't say that they weren't told. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I've been in the court process here in Oakland County. That's the county that I'm in. And I personally say it's not never really in the favor of tenants. So I don't have to really go that far. Usually a copy of license and the signatures is more than enough, especially when I have a tracking record of how they pay. So I use apartments.com to actually manage. That's my payment system. So, you know, tenants, they pay. There's several different ways they can pay, but everything is tracked through apartments.com. So if I ever have to do a 7-day notice, pay or quit notice is what I'm talking about, or if I have to, you know, proceed with eviction, I'm never there doing the eviction myself. I hire an attorney to do the eviction. And it's usually like about $50 or so for the 7-day notice. The eviction is probably around $700 to $800 in this market. Mm-hmm. And I just do like a quick printout and then just submit an email, and then that's it. You know, I don't even, so the eviction process, I'm really not hands-on, you know, in the eviction process.
I think it's smart to hire, like, so we use paralegals here instead of lawyers. Mm-hmm. And it's just more cost efficient. So I actually just went through an eviction process. I hire a paralegal, I give them the evidence and off they go. But to your point, and I think it's important for new real estate investors to understand, when you're investing in real estate, you have to understand whether your area is landlord friendly or tenant friendly. And I'm in a tenant friendly province, which means they tend to favor tenants when we have to go to court. So I have to stack my evidence. So that's why I do this initialing. And this is why I record all interactions, because then, you know, tenants are always saying, oh no, she didn't tell me this, or they didn't tell me that. So everything's documented on paper, and I have audio recordings of all of our interactions. And so if they try to make a denial, I can say, well, I actually have evidence contrary to that. And so it makes my case very easy to win. But if you're in a landlord friendly state, yeah, I mean, I think it makes it a little bit easier for you, but great idea in having a paralegal handle or a lawyer handle that eviction process. It's definitely money well spent, right?
Oh, definitely. And you know what? There's one issue with the eviction process that I did run into that was very abnormal, I would say. We have the COVID executive order. Now, I'm not sure if that's still in effect, but as of, I would say, 6 months ago, it was still in effect. So I had an eviction. I went on a property I purchased with an existing tenant inside. And of course, you know, the worst tenants are the ones that know their rights.
Right.
So I had to go through the full-fledged process. And what happened was, because they had that COVID executive order, the difference was they allowed the tenant to two times not to show up to court. So the first time it was the mediation, which the tenant didn't show up. The second time was the court, actual court appointment for the demand possession, but the tenant didn't show up. So they made me wait another 35 days after the first 35 days. It was like a total of like, you know, 70 days or so before I could actually proceed with the eviction. And where if it was a normal payer quit, it would have been, I would have got the tenant out within the first, 30 to 35 days. So that's something to be aware of. And as well too, the reason why I don't like to do, I can actually do the, some of the evictions I can actually do myself, but the processing might be a little bit slower because I don't know anybody personally at the court, the courthouse, where the lawyer, he knows people at the courthouse to help push the process, faster.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, the paralegals, they certainly do. And the lawyers, they cover their weight in gold. I mean, just for what they do. And it's easy for us as lay people, not fully understanding the process, to not file a piece of paper that needs to be filed or to do it wrong. And so if we fill it out wrong, then, we have to start the process all over again. So definitely worth their weight in gold. That's for sure. But yeah, like what other tips would you say, like for somebody who's starting out in real estate, Darius, we talk a lot about kind of the real estate mindset. And so there's a lot of people out there that says, well, yeah, it's not for me. It'll never happen. I don't have those deep pockets. So what would you tell those people as far as going out there? And yeah, you can do this too. Like I was a janitor and I had, I was living in a home with a lot of people and I just decided to put my head down and make it happen. And I think it's just about determination, right? So what would you tell those people that don't believe that they can to help them make them believe that they can?
Yeah. So what I learned from doing all this is that I could not save as fast as the properties could appreciate. And what that means is that once the properties appreciate and I extracted that cash, I was able to physically understand that, hey, I have all this money here. If I look back, I was like, wow, if I would have tried to, there would be no way of me saving if I tried to save all this money. So if what I would tell people is to be patient, you're going to get paid for your patience. And that's what real estate is about. You're buying something low and you're waiting for that property to inflate or appreciate in value. And that's the best advice I can give you to help change your mindset there. Or if you get in a hard situation and you feel like you're going nowhere, just understand that that property is slowly, growing in value.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's disheartening for some people. There's a lot of the mindset out there that's out there now. A lot of people, they want instant gratification and they're not able to be patient, but I think patience is definitely rewarded. And on top of that, it's very frustrating as a real estate coach for myself, where there's people that are complaining and there's people in my inner circle that are like, oh, I'm always broke. I don't have any cash, or I don't know what I'm going to do for my retirement. How am I going to retire on the small pension? But they own a home and they don't want to do the work by taking a HELOC and buying a rental property, which can be a game changer. Just that one extra property can make a massive difference in their retirement. And so there's a lot of homeowners out there. If you're a homeowner and you're listening, like instead of taking a refi to pay off the credit cards, you shouldn't be living beyond your means. Forget, get rid of those credit cards. You should be refinancing your home and buying a second property. Don't go on vacation or make it a smaller vacation.
Yeah. And just to make a small comment on that, the banks are smart. You're not going to trick the banks. The reason why they're giving you a consolidation loan on a cash or refinance is simply because they know there's a very high percentage chance that you're going to go take out another loan. So why not instead of taking that loan out and, paying, debt down to consolidate debt, why don't you use it to make more money? People generally have an income problem. They don't have a debt issue. It's generally more of an income problem. If you had more income, you wouldn't have to really worry about the debt. And I'm actually, as I grow my income, you should be paying your debt down a lot faster. If you heard the term principal pay down, we sit and we look at how much somebody's making, but look back and see how much they're paying that principal down. The faster you pay the principal down, you can reborrow that money again later on and reinvest it. So even if you're breaking even on a property that has debt on it, you're really not breaking even because you're paying the debt down. So absolutely. If you borrow $1 million, if you borrow $1 million and spend $1 million and pay down $1 million, you can reborrow that money back and reinvest it into another $1 million worth of assets.
Yeah. And that's the money game behind real estate that people don't talk about, right? So essentially what you do is, you know, if you have a little bit of extra money here and a little bit of extra money there, it's not enough to pay for property. You can do an annual pay down on your principal residence and then tap into that. Maybe, you know, you don't want to tap into it now, the rates are high, but maybe in a couple of years when the interest rates go down, then it's cheaper money to borrow and then you can borrow against that. So ultimately by paying down your principal, what happens is you're going to be paying less interest on your mortgage, but also it's like putting money in the piggy bank that you can refi out later to buy another property. And if you're paying it down instead of putting it in a savings account, then you're not going to be able to go and tap into it and spend it, which is what happens with a lot of savings accounts, right? People, right. You know, put money in a savings account and then they end up spending it. So, which is unfortunate.
Right.
Yeah. Well, listen, Darius, we unpacked a lot there. I do love, again, I just love your story. I think it's very inspiring for people to hear that's what the show's all about. It's like everyday people. I'm just an everyday person. I mean, I grew up with in poverty. I didn't have a home. My grandmother raised me and we didn't have a principal residence. We bounced around a lot and, here we are, you and I and many other people kind of making their own fortunes and taking control of their own financial situations and building a life by design instead of a life by default. And you are the epiphany of that, Darius. Is there any final words that you want to share with the audience or any words of wisdom that you want to put out there?
Yes. If you like the podcast today and you're interested in more information, please go to me and Danielle's Instagram accounts. My Instagram is Darius_1of1. So that's O-N-E of O-N-E spelt out. Also, you can send me a message there or you can go to my website at rewithd.com and book a real estate coaching call. There's also a course in there as well. So please contact me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, that's what I love too about real estate investors. They're always wanting to give back and help others along their journeys as well. So if you want to check out Darius, all his socials will be in the bio, the show notes. And so you can reach out to him anytime. He is located in Pontiac, Michigan. And so, today's technology, we can help people across the nation. So having said that, Darius, thanks again for coming on the show. Appreciate you having you and sharing your story. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right. This is Danielle Chason signing off for the Let's Get Real Estate podcast. This is where I bring to you real people doing real estate. Bye for now.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast and congratulations on improving your education real estate.
Please leave a review only if you felt we provided value, as it would really help us if you would leave a 5-star review so that we can help reach a broader audience.
And don't forget to comment what you enjoyed and tell us what you are looking to learn more about.
As always, thanks for your support and we'll see you on the next episode.